Oh, welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Chris Temple, founder and editor of The National Investor. And Chris, I want to quickly circle around to our last conversation, which happened Wednesday morning, pretty much just as the markets were opening when they opened up fairly significantly down. But then throughout that day, they did get bought back and finished the day pretty much neutral. But on that opening of the market on Wednesday, you were painting a picture that was pretty bearish, pretty pessimistic overall. Has anything changed in your mind simply because we had Wednesday, markets got bought back, Thursday, markets had a pretty good day? Anything changing your mind?
No, not on that big picture, Corey, and I'll explain why. You know, I was listening maybe an hour or so ago, if even that, to Jim Cramer on CNBC. He's that network's version of Bobcat Goldthwait, as I've quipped many times in the past, with his mannerisms and hysterics and so forth that you see from him on occasion. And he's beside himself trying to understand why anybody would be predicting a recession when we have a record low unemployment rate and there's record high JOLTS numbers, that's the job openings in the U.S., and this consumer is still strong, et cetera, et cetera. And were I in a conversation with him in their studio or over a cocktail tonight, I'd say that doesn't have a damn thing to do with what my view is of the markets. You know, Jay Powell, I've pointed this out before, the reason he was trying to normalize policy and got away with it for a little while until the markets made him stop at the end of last year, correctly pointed out that the last two major recessions in this country, which in especially the latter one in 2008 reverberated around the world, had nothing to do with the unemployment rate or the inflation rate or any of that stuff. It had to do with financial market excesses that had become unsustainable and started to break and fall in on themselves. And that is what I'm seeing right now. China scares the hell out of me right now. The U.S. energy situation and the oil patch scares the hell out of me right now. And those are things, both of them, Corey, that have come about fairly abruptly, especially where China's concerned. The market rallied yesterday and filled a gap that I pointed out to my audience yesterday morning. So now there is no further technical reason, to the extent there was anyway, why the market cannot resume this decline, which I completely expect in the coming days. But, you know, China, even though markets rallied because, oh, they didn't fix the midpoint of the yuan dramatically lower, they fixed it overnight at the lowest rate in 11 years. It's the wrong side of 7 yuan to the dollar. Why did they do that? Why are they signaling to the markets that there is now going to be a lower trading range for the yuan? It's because that country is under enormous stress. You had it come out yesterday morning that you now have industrial companies in China that have no money, they can get no new credit from banks, and they are literally paying one another in IOUs with their fingers crossed, hoping that things change in a hell of a hurry. You've got deflation in consumer prices, which is making the business situation worse, at the same time that the cost of living for citizens is going up, largely because of food. You know, you've got the swine issue, which is exacerbating that and so forth. So even though the type of stagflation light that some of us have expected for the U.S. has been slow to materialize, they've got it full on in China right now. This is not going to last much longer. Something's going to break. And that's what I'm looking at. And I told my members yesterday when I sent out some additional recommendations on my own portfolio mix, which has shifted much more less net stocks. And the only reason we're still somewhat net positive with stocks is basically because of mining stocks. The gold, most of all, most everything else I've been cutting back on. Whether they're winners, losers, I don't care. And what I said to my members was that, you know, starting in 2007, when I saw commodity stocks getting frothy, when I saw some of the signs that were coming that finally did hit later in 2008 of the mortgage and real estate debacle, I started telling people to sell stuff wholesale back then. My timing wasn't perfect, but it was better than most anybody else's, because in 2008, when everybody else was down 40 or 50 or 60%, our official number for the year was, if you average all of my portfolio recommendations together, we were down 0.1% for 2008. And I'll take that any day, because what you have to be concerned about now as an investor is not making money, but if this next storm hits and you're not ready for it, you don't want to go through another loss. You know, I quipped the other day about some of these gold bugs, especially some of the gold bug gurus thumping their chests. I have a hard time understanding why. It's like if Peter Schiff finally is right on his $5,000 an ounce call, or Harry Dent or Robert Prechter finally get right that we have a massive bear market. By the time those come along, what will it matter? Because listening to their advice, which was wrong for years, has already cost you so much money if you invested based on that. That, you know, you're going, like I said about gold the other day, some of these guys are from a 90% portfolio loss to maybe a 60 or 70% portfolio loss. And, I'm not right all the time either. But you know what? This is a time to make sure that if this thing hits like I see coming, you're not in harm's way. You're not going to take that 40 or 50 or 60% portfolio hit and then have to spend a lot of time later when these central banks have to cobble things back together, just getting back to even. I don't want to court that to begin with. So even though it might not be a fashionable thing to do today, I think that you've got to, you know, get defensive. I love what a guy, and then I'll shut up. I love what a guy on, another guy on CNBC quipped a while ago, Guy Adami. I love his characterization, and you're going to hear me use it more. This is the time that for going to the mattresses mode, you know, and those in our audience who are Godfather movie groupies like I am will know what that means. That means you get the hell out of the way. You don't want to be out in the street when the bullets start flying.
Hey, Chris, I find it noteworthy that you are getting so defensive and changing portfolio that aggressively to the defensive side, because in all fairness, we've heard recession fears for the last couple of years, and we have had some weakness around the world, but you haven't been so much on that boat. So I do think now, seeing just how defensive you're getting, this is, or very well could be, a good time to just leave the risk on markets. But how about this still almost buy the dip mentality? Yes, I realize that the markets filled a gap just yesterday with their nice moves, but similar conversation I had with Dana Lyons, he's even saying he's taking less of a buy the dip mentality. Do you think that this could be nearing the end of when we do see a down day for the markets, it doesn't get bought back the very next day?
Well, here's what you got to remember, by and large, Corey. The biggest proponents of the buy the dip mentality, and if I think that's the thing to do, then I say that. But I've changed. I don't think that's the thing to do now. The reason you still hear so much of that is that you've got a fairly healthy percentage of money managers and gurus out there who weren't even around in 2008. They know no world other than risk assets rising, and if they hiccup at all, don't worry, the Fed's going to come to the rescue. That's all they know. So, you know, they're going on the muscle memory of, oh, the Fed is going to get dragged along, kicking and screaming perhaps, but there's no way that they're going to be able to avoid either President Trump's pressure or everybody else cutting rates even more. We just heard from the Reserve Bank of Australia overnight that more rate cuts are coming there, which is not good news. It's very bad news because it tells you how much the stress is in Asia. And on that same score, and this is what these buy the dippers completely overlooked yesterday with this bounce that we had, that at least for the U.S. market indices, the S&P filled that gap down on Monday morning. The Japanese yen never moved yesterday. It should have sold off. Now, Treasury sold off a little bit, but they're right back in the bullish direction this morning. So you've got a lot of signals internally in the market telling you the trouble that's coming. And again, this has nothing to do with the fact that, yeah, you've got a modest earnings recession. In the grand scheme of things, that in and of itself doesn't mean that you've got a bear market coming in stocks. The bear market is going to come for the same reasons that the last two bear markets and recessions came. It's going to be a financial accident. It's going to be all of these skyscrapers of cards that have been built in the world are in big trouble. And I've said this to you guys before, and I've said it again recently, and I'm going to say it again today. Back in January, I said that the number one issue on my list that was going to cause this is China. I've doubled down on it, and I'm tripling down on it now. You might put it off if both sides are so afraid of what they see that they cobble together at least the appearance of some kind of a new truce again so that the markets can rally. But I'm telling you, I think that the die has already been cast financially. And with or without the exacerbating influences of this trade war, you've already got things so stretched in China that it's a matter of time before mathematics catches up, even with the Chinese government that has far more power than the U.S. government does in relative terms, to basically by edict keep a crash from ever happening. It's not still going to, you know, solve that problem forever. So when you look at things like this, and then what happens? I mean, this morning you had the news of we're going to hold Huawei over China's head again. So they now, what did they just announce? They just announced that Huawei now has got its own system, kind of like iOS, kind of, you know, the Apple and the Google operating systems. If we can't work with you, fine, we'll set up our own. What else are they doing? They're working on putting together regional trade deals over in their part of the world. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again, that aside from, you know, how companies are going to have to be moving supply chains, you're going to get a different mix of products and services from different places than you had before. That's one thing. And that in and of itself isn't all bad. I think there are some good things that are going to come from this move away from globalization. You know, and that has many causes, and that didn't start with Donald Trump. But again, what the markets are totally underestimating right now, including with this buy the dip mentality, is that maybe countries and companies in some ways can bob and weave and make the changes they have to. They're not all going to be seamless. They're not all going to be painless as we move to a different regimen in the world as far as trade and the economy is concerned. But markets that have become bloated with debt on top of debt and derivatives on top of derivatives on top of all of that, they decidedly are not ready for this changing regimen. And that's where the damage is going to start.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. You have been outlining this scenario where we could see a pretty distinct divide going forward in the world. And it does seem like that is coming, but it's just a big question mark of what that's going to look like and how quickly maybe some of these other side trade deals will be done. But Chris, you also did mention that China has a bit more control, let's say, over their central bank and monetary policy. But quite frankly, the Fed is also looking easier. Will it not be enough this time if or when we do get those more aggressive QE programs out of, say, the Fed, the ECB, and even out of China?
I don't think it will. In some respects, depending on how quickly and specifically the Fed might act, it may mitigate some of the damage that's to come. But as I've said repeatedly, Corey, and this is being revealed more and more, what we have had already for the last 10 to 12 years now, in the form of zero interest rates or less in many places, in the form of quantitative easing, in the form of what China has done with its bloated credit system, which is the worst on the planet these days. And as far as the financial aspect of that, that has spilled over into Hong Kong, which is why that is starting to worry a few more people that have any sense. You've already had all of this oversupply, overcapacity, and malinvestment in the world created by this artificially low interest rate environment. Like I've said a million times to these clowns that are out there talking about how gold prices were suppressed for so long, and I'll say it again. Anybody that ever says that to you folks, that that's a factor, don't walk away, run, because they're selling you a bunch of nonsense and they don't understand how markets work. But that said, the suppression that everybody should have been worrying about, that especially if they were talking about that fantasy, was the suppression of interest rates in this world, which made anything, you know, a spoofing of gold prices, which is a totally different thing, that's a pimple on a flea compared to the real suppression that has gone on in the world and has led to all of these imbalances, all of this oversupply, and all of these deflationary fears. So what's going to happen, Corey, is this. You're going to see at some point something break, and I think it's going to have something to do with China, as I've been saying. And the central banks are going to try and rush in, and they're going to start buying assets. They'll start buying, hell, in Europe, they're not far from buying equities now, the European Central Bank. They'll buy whatever junk bonds are still floating around out there. That's going to cause more problems further than it's going to solve. But here's the thing. You'll have guys running around again telling you this is going to lead to hyperinflation. It didn't lead to hyperinflation when they did this in 2008, 9, and 10, and 11. Except for hyperinflation again, eventually, when it finally took in asset prices. And that's because for every new dollar these central banks create, all it's going to do is mitigate the market and economies obliterating way more than that is the deflation takes hold that they have sown the seeds of. So from time to time, if the central banks act aggressively, if this starts to unfold again, you'll get some people in a market saying, oh, good, it's better late than never. They're finally going to arrest this decline. But the die has already been cast. And so you're going to have to, at least for a while, be an investor very defensively and understand that the big wave to come now is not inflation, because all of these central banks are renewing their efforts to try and stoke economic activity, stoke inflation. They've already done all of that for a dozen years. Unfortunately, the next big move is going to be new waves of deflation around the world.
Hey, Chris, you're fired up today. I find this very enjoyable when we get into some of these topics. And yeah, you've outlined many good reasons to, first and foremost, expect and predict this upcoming recession, but then also look at just maybe how handcuffed some of these central banks are because of, well, the suppressed interest rates in the world and the fact that they already have tried this card a few times. And there's a lot of liquidity in this market and, quite frankly, around the world. So,
well, the point is that liquidity is potentially going to start to evaporate fast if you see something start to break. And that's what happened in 2008. You're going to start seeing certain kinds of securities go no bid. Nobody's going to want them.
But to your point, too, this is something that a lot of people, well, new people in the markets haven't experienced before.
Yeah. It's right. I mean, there's this Pollyanna type attitude out there that, and again, it's because a good slug of people out there have never really seen much different. Even if they lived through 2008, they saw how aggressively the central banks stepped in afterward. But, you know, again, I have for a while, and you know this, I've been kind of the muddle through attitude, you know, pick our spots. You can buy certain kinds of stock and stock groups. But I'm telling you, with what has happened with this turn of events where China is concerned, just in the last 7 or 8 days, this has, more than anything I've seen since 2007 and 8, this has dramatically raised the stakes, dramatically raised the chances that something here sooner rather than later is going to give. And again, the takeaway, folks, that I'm trying to get through to you is that, unlike what Cramer was saying and some other people talking about economic fundamentals, and granted, right now the U.S. is still the best-looking economy in the world. We're relatively stronger than most of the rest. That's going to mean nothing if you see a credit crisis in China or something bad in Hong Kong, and all of a sudden the dominoes start falling, the margin calls start, the scramble for dollars and yen goes up exponentially, and everything else collapses. The health of the economy, the health of the U.S. consumer will mean nothing in that context when the markets start to unravel.
All right, Chris, we're going to wrap it up there, but a lot for everyone to digest as we head into the weekend. This is going to be my probably last interview of the day. I hope everybody enjoyed what Chris had to say, and throughout this week, it was sure a very busy week for the markets and for spiking volatility. Everyone stay tuned to this weekend show. We're going to be getting some more comments on just how shaky this overall financial system seems to be right now. Chris, thanks for your time today.